White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 536.
You are listening to the AU Wishbone, almost credible sports discussion on the White Rocket Entertainment Network.
Bye-bye, Bo! Touchdown, Auburn!
The kick is good! Auburn wins!
Shivers just ran through a man! Touchdown, Auburn!
Hello! Welcome to the AU Wishbone, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with TheWarEagleReader.com and, of course, by people like you. You, the Auburn family, the AU Wishbone family, our Patreon.com family. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-host.
I'm John Ringer.
All right, John, here we are. A-Day is over, and we got a long way to go until the fall. Things are happening. Not all of them necessarily what you'd call, quote, good, unquote, right? So we got some things to talk about there. And some people are panicking, some people are not. I saw that a little bit on Twitter this afternoon. I didn't know what they were talking about until now. I looked at our show notes and went, ah! I looked at our show notes about 5 minutes ago, and I said,
oh, my God!
That was not good. And it apparently quite a few of our an unhealthy number of our existing players have looked at the roster and said,
I cannot eat. I am finicky about company.
And so they've left. And I don't know. I don't know what to think. So I'm coming to you tonight. I'm coming to you here to help me reckon with this situation, right? So we'll get to that in just a second, but I think first we probably should talk about the good side of it, which is we had some players drafted. Now, there's also the dark side of that we have to talk about is how do we keep bringing in top 10 classes and getting like three players drafted every year? I don't understand that.
That's a good question.
Yeah. So what are your thoughts on the draft? Let's kind of kick things off, and then we can dig into it.
Sure. So the basic summary is former Auburn players were drafted. Five players that were on Auburn the last couple years were drafted. Anthony Schwartz in the third round to the Browns. Seth Williams in the seventh round to Denver, which we'll talk about. KJ Britt in the fifth round of Tampa Bay. Sherwood in the fifth round of Tampa Bay. That was it. That was only four players got drafted. Yeah. And then Jordan Peters signed a free agent deal with the Jets. And I think a couple other players are talking to teams about free agent deals.
But looks like Eli Stove with the Chargers.
Okay. So, you know, some good spots for them. It'll be fun to see how they do. I think, you know, Schwartz is in a good spot for him. They need a fast receiver on that team. They have other types of good offensive players, so he's not expected to be the whole offense, just kind of do his thing. And Britt, I mean, he's going to the defending Super Bowl champions, and they have really talented linebackers ahead of him, including that Devin White guy, but a good place to come in and learn, an experienced, super talented defensive team, you know, that has high expectations. So that was really good. Sherwood is going to go from a safety at Auburn to a linebacker in the NFL. And he's, he's going to be kind of an outside linebacker, cover linebacker kind of guy in the NFL. And I think he has good potential there. I think he may work out well. And Seth Williams, I think a lot of people thought he might be the first Auburn player picked if you watch the games the last 2 years. And he wasn't. I think he's not as fast as people think. And he's inconsistent, right? I think that's some of that is the offense and what he was asked to do and stuff, but he also had games where he dominated and took over and was the best player in the field. So that's he's got an uphill climb. He's on a team with a lot of good receivers, and he's got to have a really good fall just to make the team. So that's kind of where we are. Jordan Peters, I think because he's so good at special teams, has a chance to stick in the NFL, whether with the Jets or somebody else. But I think it's that's a guy that has skills that teams, football teams, look for. So that's kind of my view of it. I mean, I know you don't watch a lot of NFL, and if you have any strong thoughts about any of that, but okay. But you raised a good point, which is we need to, you know, it's a cause effect thing. You get more players in the NFL, and then better players want to come play for you. Right. And it's a vicious circle kind of thing. And so one of the good things I saw this weekend is that Harsin is among the best at the Power Five, you know, at the coaches at the non-Power Five schools at generating NFL players. Mm. So he turned out NFL players at Boise.
Right. That's a promising little factoid there that maybe, I mean, Gus kind of was the opposite of that.
So Harsin, without the same raw materials, turned out a lot of good NFL players from the way he was working with. So that's a development thing. Mm. I think it's a good sign. When you combine that with better recruiting, I think, you know, it's a promising thing for Auburn in the future.
There was a really interesting line I read from a guy that I see a lot on, like, message board type stuff, email lists going back 25 years, an All-Auburn guy. He's always had really good inside information, and he just put it this way. He said something like, you know, and we'll talk about this as we go along over the next, you know, couple of months and when we get to the barbecue show, of course. But he said, you know, how we do this fall will depend in large part on how the changes, how the team adapts to all the changes, because he said, because there are a lot of changes. And I thought that was interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
A lot of changes.
Very different.
I think that's what we wanted, right?
Yeah. I mean, it wouldn't marginal, you know, incremental change was not going to get us where we needed to go.
No.
We needed to make bigger change. So.
Well, that's like, you know, Tuberville firing one or two of his coordinators. That's not the kind of change we wanted. We wanted
that's right
program redefining change. And so that gives me encouragement. I mean, you know, and again, we've made it very clear that we always, you know, loved Gus, certainly personally and for the things that we accomplished under him, but we also were kind of ready. I think we were all kind of ready to go ahead and, you know, even, you know, we've talked about before. I mean, this is the sort of analogy I've used many times is that, you know, some big soccer teams will win the World Cup and then have a different coach the next time just because you don't want to just keep doing the same thing and getting stale and people figuring out what you're doing. And so, you know, after, you know, 8 years, 10 years, whatever, it's not really a bad idea to, I mean, maybe if you're Alabama, you don't want to pitch Saban off the side of the road after 4 or 5 years. But other than that, you know, if you're just kind of muddling along at 8-5, what have you got to lose?
Yeah. But I mean, again, now give some credit to Saban to say one of the defining things about him is the adaptability. Like, they are not the same kind of football team they were 7 or 8 years ago. They are fundamentally different kind of team.
I hate to say that was also true of Bear Bryant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're both similar in the way that, and God knows I hate to say anything positive about either one of them, but they were both coaches that honestly didn't really have a philosophy beyond just the old work thing, you know, like Pat Dye. And what they really did was just make things work in a given year. And when that quit working, they just went and did something else. They were never married to something the way that Gus, you know, is so married to his system. You just can't imagine Gus coaching football without coaching his football. I can't imagine him suddenly going to the option or the wishbone or the run and shoot or something. You know what I mean? I mean, he is that. So yeah, I mean, you get what you get with some coaches and some are more adaptable. So why is it then that we had 4 players drafted this year? And honestly, that's in comparison to some years recently, that's actually not bad.
It's not bad. Again, we had 2 first round picks like a year ago, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, Derek Brand and Marlon Davidson. So I think it's the first time we've had 2 receivers drafted since.
Oh. All right, Jared, I can do this. Let me think. All right. I'm sure that at least 2 of them off of the class of 05, I'm sure that at least 2 of them went in the NFL, probably Ace and Deuce. Yeah. Since then, Did any of Cam's? Well, I know we had a tight end and a receiver off of Cam's team. Maybe I'm going to say the last time we had two receivers drafted, I'm going to be generous and say, like, well, it could have been 14 with a big tall dude. What was it? I got a lot of answers here.
You were right the first time. It was a Roma Shudu and a Mbanu.
Wow. Really?
Yes. Okay. So I think that's a position where Auburn, you know, again, the leading receiver in Auburn history is somebody that played a long time ago. Auburn doesn't churn out 1,000-yard receivers. We need to change that. No. We need to get some big-time receiving stats and have some guys some big seasons. We've got some talent at that position, and I think, you know, we just had two guys drafted. I think we have some good players in the current roster. We need to get them to have some big years to attract them. Some good players there.
There was a year just a couple of years ago, and I don't remember which season it was, that you asked me, would so-and-so have a 1,000-yard receiving year? And I said, oh, yeah, sure. And you're like, well, hold on, because look at recent history. And we looked at the numbers, and it's like, oh, I mean, retract that statement.
But some of that was a Gus thing.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah, how are you going to – I mean, did any receiver, even when Cam was our quarterback, have a 1,000 yards that year?
No. I think Darvin Adams had like 995 or something.
Yeah, it would be him. But God, I love those receivers. That whole team. Oh, just thinking about who was the other receiver? Darvin Adams and
Terrell Zachary.
T Zach. God, I was like T what? I can't want to say T Bell. Tesharvin Bell was messing me up. Yeah, T Zach. God, I love T Zach. That was such a great receiving core because you had like the possession guy, you had the speed guy who was still big and strong. He wasn't like a little, you know, he wasn't like Alexander Wright or something, or Flash. He was a big, tough guy in T-Zach. And then you had kind of a in-between guy in Blake.
Mm-hmm. You know. He was could do everything well.
Yeah, yeah. He wasn't dominant at anything, but he was kind of an Eli Stove in a way, you know. You kind of had him as a stove guy, and then you had like the Flash guy, and then you had the kind of a Seth Williams guy, honestly.
Yeah.
So
that's a good comparison.
So I'll never understand why we bring in 4 and 5 star players, and then I guess because we tend to send our 5-star players to other programs before they graduate. That seems to be the trend.
It's fair.
You have a question here, players on Auburn's current roster who will be NFL draft picks.
I was just trying to think about who on Auburn's current roster will play in the NFL for sure, right? I think so. I mean, I think if we started offense, Tank will play in the NFL. Like that guy is all kinds of talent.
You got to think so.
You know, beyond that on offense,
not the offensive line.
I'm doing the shrug emoji.
Yeah.
Maybe a couple, I think a couple of the tight ends have real potential. Because they can do things the NFL would like, you know, Luke Deal, you know, maybe some of the younger ones. We don't know about the young receivers. Like we don't know which of them, you know, like they have size and speed and ability, but we got to see something out of them. Defensively, I think there's a lot of guys that'll play in the NFL.
Yeah, more and the kicker.
Yeah, the kicker will get. But yeah, it. You know, the younger Carlson, but you know, Roger McCreary will play in the NFL. I think both Papo and Zacoby McClain will play in the NFL. I think a couple of the defensive linemen will play in the NFL. Colby Wooden, I think, is really good. I think he's definitely going to be an NFL player. And Zacavius Walker is young, but he has a lot of potential too. I like him a lot. So we'll see. And again, like our former tight end has all the athletic ability in the world. That's a guy a year from now that NFL teams could be talking about. So Pegues. But the now we're at the portion of the agenda where it's time to ask Van, are you panicking? Why aren't you panicking, Van? Shouldn't you be panicking?
Well, I was going to say, when you ask which of our offensive players is going to end up in the NFL,
someone knows. God knows.
That's for sure. God knows. I hope. Maybe he doesn't even know. I'm panicking a little bit, but not really because I'm confused. We have a Jay Handy and a Jay Hardy, and they both. Am I upset about either one of them, or am I confusing them as the same guy? Or I'm so lost now.
You, J, We should be upset about both of them.
Okay.
Because they're both defensive linemen who can play. Hardy is the guy, Jay Hardy, J-A-Y Hardy, is the guy who was a top 100 high school recruit and thought about Auburn, but then signed with Tennessee. And then when Tennessee fired their coach, signed with Auburn this past offseason, and now we've gone through spring practice, and he's back in the transfer portal, and Auburn's former defensive line coach is at Tennessee.
It's that guy?
It's that guy.
He's been in the portal more than Doctor Who. Hey, I could have gone and gotten the music, but I figure I can just sing it. That's his new theme song, because he's just living in the portal. His house is like a British telephone box.
So, Jalen Handy, whose nickname is Stone, is the other guy who's a defensive lineman who was a high-profile recruit out of Mississippi 2 years ago. And, you know, he's transferring out. I think – and then the other guy – so, those two guys have been confusing since they've been in Auburn. The other name today is Shale Garnett, put his name in the transfer portal.
To be honest, I don't feel as bad about him just because I feel like he was always the quarterback that was he was always like the if everything else goes wrong, break glass and pull him out, right? He never seemed to me that we brought him in to be our generational quarterback for a couple of years. He always seemed like he was the Malik Willis of that. Well, and I know, and that's a whole other.
We got to go there after this.
Which is the one that was at Tennessee and then he was at Auburn?
Hardy.
I thought I had him. I hate life sometimes.
So why are these players transferring now? So spring practice is over.
Here he is. There's his song. All right, all the Doctor Who fans are excited now. I had to get that in. All right, back to
you know, that's a Venn diagram of like Wishbone listeners and Doctor Who fans. That's about five people.
I'm telling you, but those five people are vocal and they're all excited right now. Okay, we'll hear from them on Twitter tomorrow.
Okay,
we will.
So, why are these players transferring now? And should you panic? They're transferring now because it's after spring practice. And they've met with their position coaches, and I think the players, you know, the coaches are being honest with them about where they stand and what they need to work on to get on the field and stuff. And I think the players have a pretty honest idea about where they are in the depth chart and in Auburn's future, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so in some cases, that's not what they wanted to hear. Mm-hmm. You know, guys want to play, guys want to start. And I think, you know, some of these guys looked at it and said, you know, I'm not starting. I'm going to try to go somewhere else. So the little bit of a, you know, one of the strongest spots on Auburn's team heading into the offseason was defensive tackle, where we had a great deal of depth and talent. And we've now had, you know, three or four players transfer out. Daquan Newkirk transferred out. He's going to start at Florida. And Quintus Miller transferred out. And he's starting, I think, at Florida State. And now Hardy, right? And so, you know, we're going to a 3-4 defense. So there's fewer defensive linemen that can play, right? We had more defensive linemen, than we needed a little bit because of that. And then some other guys I think have moved into the rotation ahead of some of these other guys. I think a guy like Hardy looked at the situation and saw a guy like Pegues transfer positions and pass him. And said, I was a top 100 high school recruit as a defensive tackle, and this guy has been playing it for a week, and he, you know, was ahead of me on the depth chart for the spring game. So I think that's part of it. So, and, you know, the NCAA did just pass the you can transfer anytime or you know, one time without penalty, basically immediate eligibility thing. So there are going to be more transfers.
Well, that's what I want to ask you. Hold on. Yeah. That's what I want to ask you. Is this just like the transfer year and it's going to be worse this year and then it'll settle down? Or is this like the new normal?
I don't know. I think this is going to be the transfer year. I think because of the COVID year and Auburn having a new coaching staff, right?
Mm-hmm.
Different schemes, different expectations, different ways of relating to players. I think it is natural for some players to transfer. And you combine that with the immediate eligibility thing, and these guys all think they could start somewhere. So they're going to enter the portal and try to find a place to start. So, you know, we'll see, right? I think one of the other things is they're opening up spots where Auburn can bring transfers in, right? They're freeing up a scholarship where other players, this isn't an Auburn thing. Yeah. This is going to be a college football wide thing. You know, Georgia had a four-star guy get in the transfer portal today. This is going to happen everywhere. Okay. So players are going to leave and go other places, and this is going to happen to Auburn. If this really bothers you, if this upsets you, you know, my only suggestion is, maybe stay off social media for the next couple months because it's not going away. It's not going to end anytime soon. Man. But I think, in the big picture, Auburn's going to get some more transfers, right? We've got two coming in. We've got the defensive end from Northwestern and a cornerback from West Virginia. They're both coming in, and we're probably going to get some more. So I'm not panicking about the transfer portal thing, but I do think, you know, there are guys that you know, some other guys on Auburn's roster are probably thinking about this right now.
Oh, boy.
So but it is a good question about the, is this the new normal? Because basketball has gotten there, right?
Mm.
The transfer rate in basketball is like 30%
yeah.
of no all doubt. Players, basically, are moving at the end of a season.
There's no doubt.
And in football, you know, it's been whatever, 1%, 5%, you know, 2% something.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just stressful. I kind of miss the days when the players would come and be with you for 4 years or whatever, but I guess it's just that's just how it is. We shouldn't expect that it's going to be like that. And, yeah, I mean, when it's true. We're really just kind of like in the eye of the storm right now because, like you said, we had the COVID thing with all the new rules just for this. We have the new coaching staff. We have changing systems. There's just a lot happening right now. We had the disruption of our recruiting last year, which was worse for us than for a lot of people. Just so many things together that are causing this to be a particularly bad for us, I guess. But I mean, I don't think we're going to have a great season anyway. Honestly, just kind of getting started on the new foot. So I guess if you're going to go through all this, might as well go through it this year and kind of get it behind us. That's why I was wondering if it's going to be like this every year, because I'd like to get it behind us now, like it's 1981 or 1999, you know, and get on to the good stuff, hopefully.
I hear you on that. But I think the other thing is, again, like if you're a freshman who signed last year, you know, you didn't get to do a bunch of on-campus visits and stuff.
Right.
You didn't get to have the same kind of student experience that other freshmen in Auburn have had. And so it's puts you in a different place. And then you got a new coaching staff who have, you know, have different expectations for you. And maybe you're not liking where you are in the depth chart of your position. And so again.
Yeah. Well, did you mention in there the players coming in for next year, the June, we finally, after like a year or whatever, we're going to have players come and visit. That's, you know, I do feel like, and I know this is controversial, and I know that everybody feels different about it, and that's fine, up to a point, but it does feel like in a lot of ways, people are kind of putting the pandemic thing behind us. Now, again, whether that's completely warranted or not is a whole other story, and that's not what I want to talk about. But like, for example, you know, today we were watching the Marvel Cinematic Universe trailer, and it's partly a preview of their upcoming movies over the next 2 or 3 years, but a lot of it is them overtly saying we are ready to get back and have people come in the theater and watch our movies. That's have you seen that? Did you get to see that today?
Yes, yeah, I did. It's very clearly like, hey, we want you in the theater, and they change the dates. They keep pushing the dates back because they want people in the theater.
But it looked to me like they were saying, here are the dates. We're not changing the dates anymore. If it happens, it happens. But that was the sense I got, was them saying we are ready to put dates carved in stone out there. And unless, something unthinkable happens, this is when it's going to be. And so along similar lines, I feel like maybe people seem to be feeling like that way with sports and with college football, with the recruits coming in and with expectation. I think the expectation is that the stadiums are going to be full this fall.
Yes. So we'll see. The plan. So, no, it's big for Auburn, as you mentioned, for players to come on campus visits. It makes a huge difference in our recruiting when players can be on campus and see the campus with students on and feel the campus and that kind of stuff. And so, they have lined up a huge number of recruits to visit in June, both guys that are seniors now, but guys that are sophomores and juniors in high school. Not just guys that will be seniors in the fall, but guys that will be sophomores and juniors in the fall. They're recruiting a couple of classes ahead even
to
get a leg up with those players. So I think we're going to see a lot of recruiting news in the next couple of months as players schedule their visits and come to campus and visit, and then we'll see where we go with those.
Yeah. Harsin's going to be sitting there having lunch, and he's going to look up and see a bunch of players, and he's going to be like,
"You sit at my table."
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I just want to bring you back to a week ago on this podcast. When in about 5 minutes, Van played a bunch of clips from
six clips
from a movie about the Crusades.
One of my proudest moments.
And now we're back here again. So,
well, John,
you're in here with me.
Sometimes
it occurs.
It just occurs. I can't help it. Oh, well, we wanted to talk about another position tonight. We've covered kickers and punters. Is that the two we've covered so far? I think it is.
And returners. Before we get into this, we have to go back to the Malik Willis thing for 1 second.
Yeah.
Have you seen this in the last couple of days?
Well, all I know is that somebody said he's going to be like a first-round draft pick now.
Yes. Bruce Feldman said that this
week. Is he coming out this year, or is that for next year?
That would be a year from now.
Okay.
A year from now, he would be a first-round draft pick. It's what people were talking about. And I think if that happened, Auburn fans' heads would explode.
Yeah.
That's why I'm laying it out here right now. I'm not positive that's going to happen. But if it does, you'll hear our reaction here on this podcast.
Oh, my.
But I also think, a big part of that story is the quarterback coach at Liberty changing his throwing mechanics to make him more accurate than he was when he got there.
Why couldn't we do that, John?
I'm doing the shrug emoji.
Good again.
Question. Why not us?
Why? It's funny. Somebody on Twitter today said that some of us have been saying since 2016 about the coaching, and I'm like, yeah, it was the second game of 2016 is when I first took a tire iron to the bus. It was the second game of 2016. It was at Clemson and that Texas A&M game that year, and I'm just like, all right, I'm ready. I'll still defend him. I'll still fight for things that are fair. I still want it to be an honest appraisal. That was always me, right? I wanted an honest appraisal. I always fought on social media hammer and tong against people that would just ad hominem attack Gus or criticize him, for things that weren't legit. I'd fight to the end for that because I respected him and I liked him and I rooted for him and I wasn't going to have him just stuff made up about him. But if it's a fair thing about him, I'm there. I agree. I was down from the very beginning. Before we say our final goodbye to Schwartzy, I'll do this one more time and then probably delete it off the board.
And I see your Schwartz is as big as mine.
Oh, man. It'll be sad to see that one go. We got to use it a few times over the years, though. He had a few moments. Did you ever get the sense, though, the way we were using him, that he was a great wide receiver?
No, I mean, do you think that we got the maximum use we could have out of that player? No.
Oh, Lord.
No, I don't think so.
Man. I can't think of many players that we have gotten the maximum use out of. Trey Mason and Nick Marshall. That's and our fair. Kickers. Our kickers. All of our kickers. And a couple of defensive backs and a couple of linemen. But that's about it. Certainly not the running backs. Certainly not the other quarterbacks. Well, I don't want to go down that whole rabbit hole because
it's a trap.
It is, and you know, yeah. Well, you want to talk about defensive backs?
Yes. So we've done a couple of these kind of off-season position reviews where we look at kind of the best players in Auburn history in certain positions, and so we want to talk about defensive backs today. So cornerbacks and safeties, and so the first thing is the from a criteria standpoint, what matters to you? Is it making interceptions? Is it tackles? Is it big plays, like game-winning, game-defining plays? Is it players on winning teams? And so I think for cornerbacks, it's more coverage ability, right? The ability to take a great receiver out of the game. And for safeties, I think it's more, it's all those things, but tackling and run support matters a lot more, right? And so we have some stats, but I think we're just going to have to kind of talk about who we yeah. like at these positions.
Well, two things occur to me immediately. One is a lot of the guys who are very high in the individual statistics in that position are from a way back more than, mm-hmm. you know, like the positions we've been looking at, it's almost been like 1980s maybe, but 90s, zeros, tens, right? It's been very top heavy the last several times we've been looking at players. Certainly the kickers and the punters kind of went 80s, 90s, zeros. The kickers are like just the last 25 years, it seemed like. 25, yep. 30 years mostly. But this is like mostly dudes from like the 60s, 70s. There's not a lot of recent guys on there. Now, the other thing I want to mention is if you look at it as a squad, I've been working on our upcoming book. Well, we both have been working on the book, but I've been working recently on the Terry Bowden era. And I will say this, you know, going back and doing all the research and putting together the stuff on that era, I don't know if there's ever been a defensive secondary at Auburn. I mean, maybe they weren't the greatest cover people, or maybe they weren't the best tacklers or whatever. But in terms of a secondary that as a unit could change a game, that 93-94 secondary with Brian Robinson and that whole crowd.
Yep.
I mean, the interceptions, the turnovers, the big plays. They just, game after game, they, you know, the most famous one was the 94 LSU game that we talked about a million times, right? The interception game. But both of those big Florida games, they took apart Werfel and Dean. I mean, I don't know of any other Auburn secondary that can put down a resume, a body of work of multiple games where they quite literally won the game. And they were big games, mm-hmm. big games, and they went out there and won them. So the 93-94 as a whole, you remember that first Patriots Super Bowl back like around 2000 or whenever?
Yeah.
They brought the entire defense out as their one player to introduce or whatever, you know, like for their captain. They said the entire defense. That entire secondary, it was like, I know it was Brian Robinson, Ken Alvis. Wasn't there a Fred Smith?
Yep.
And then
Chris Schelling.
And Schelling. Oh, my gosh. Those guys, just incredible. All of them. Yeah. And like in the LSU game, they each had like a touchdown.
Yep.
They each got at least one.
And in both Florida games, the 93-94, they had big plays.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was having a fun time researching Spurrier's quotes after that 94 game because, you know, we kicked the field goal to beat them because they had the ball when it was tied. And all they had to do was just go down and kick a field goal themselves. And Dean or Werfel one just drops back and just throws it right down center field. And Brian Robinson, I think it was, just sat there and caught it like a punt. It was an arm punt, you know. And Spurrier's like, yeah, that definitely wasn't what we wanted to do there. I didn't call that, you know. That was not the call. So, but your brother had some really good comments about that. I'll leave that for the book. But if you pick up a copy of our upcoming book, probably this fall, some really interesting dissection of what they were doing by Pat Ringer. So I enjoyed that a lot, getting to go back and relive that. So that's kind of in terms of squad, I would put number one. What do you think about that?
That's fair. As a unit, A to Z, that was a great secondary.
Unbelievable.
I think, so let's break it down a bit. I think Carlos Rogers, to me, maybe the best defensive back ever to play for Auburn. You know, I had that season in 2004. We won the Thorpe Award, was an All-American, was a great cover guy, but also a great run support player. Yeah, I think he, that Georgia game that year, he just made it. They kept running the outside. He made a ton of tackles. So I think that's a guy I think about immediately is like easily one of the best defensive backs ever to play at Auburn. We've had a lot of other good cornerbacks over the years, a lot of good players. We've had some guys go to the NFL.
The late 80s defensive backfield gets overshadowed by the defensive line and those linebackers. You know, we all remember Tracy Rocker anchoring that defensive front. We remember the linebackers on that team. We were in a 3-4. So you had a lot of good Ogletree and what's his name that's on
Kirk Crane and Andre Bruce.
Oh, Andre Bruce and the one that's on the Auburn network.
Stallworth.
No, that's the announcer.
Riggins. Quentin Riggins.
Yeah, Quentin Riggins, of course. Quentin Riggins. I can't forget him. Yeah, he was like the Mike Singletary of that defense. Yeah, they were also great. But the defensive backs, Carlo Cheatham and Alvin Briggs, and I remember, I think it was like, wasn't David King just right before that was really good? Was that his name? I can't, it's been a while now. But there were a lot of really good, and there were good, Shan Morris. There were a lot of really good run-stopping, Greg Staples. Oh, yeah. Greg Staples would staple a man, for no kidding. The thing I loved about that secondary, they didn't really get burned for a lot of big plays in the passing game, but in the running game, they would come up and hit like a linebacker. They were like big, strong dudes. I don't know that they had the coverage skills of the 93-94 defense, but you didn't want to run like the sweep on that late 80s defense. You would turn the corner and suddenly got stars going around, you know, bird, tweet, 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 going around your head because they came up and met you at the hole. So I'm going to go the best tackling secondary was the late 80s. The best coverage secondary was the early 90s.
That's fair. I mean, I think it's fair. But I mean, again, I think that Brian Robinson secondary was, you know, end-to-end up there. So I think about other great defensive back players that you remember at Auburn. How about
just recently?
Go ahead. I was going to say Martavis Houston.
Oh, yeah. He made that one great play in the 97 Iron Bowl, knocked the ball loose from Ed Sissom to give us the kick. Yeah, You make a game-changing play in the Iron Bowl any year, you've earned your scholarship for 4 years. You're good because you did something huge there. And he did, yeah. He was awesome, though.
Yep.
And, yeah. Who was our defensive back just a couple of years ago that was very reminiscent of Carlos Rogers from Miami, wasn't he? He just went to the NFL. He's from Miami.
Igbinogheni?
Well, he was good too.
Carlton Davis.
Carlton Davis. That's what I was trying to think of. Yeah. Davis. No,
he and Jamel Dean were the two starting cornerbacks for the Tampa Bay when they won the Super Bowl. Carlton Davis was a great college cornerback.
Yes, he was. Yeah. Let's see. Go ahead. I'm just looking at the intersection.
I was going to say, I'm going to throw out some safeties now off the top of my head.
Uh-huh.
Zach Etheridge.
Oh, yeah. Our coach.
Yep. Yeah, our current coach. But then more recently, like Rudy Ford and Jeremiah Denson. I think really solid, productive players, kind of do everything guys. We had some guys that were more hitters back there, guys that were better cover guys.
Ford started as a running back and then switched over to defense, just like Igbinogheni started as a receiver.
Well, and then Trey Matthews, another guy that transferred in from Georgia and had a couple of great years for us at safety.
It was good. He wasn't as great as we kind of hoped he would be, but I thought he was fine. Yeah.
Yeah. That's the main guys I'm thinking about. Somebody else I'm missing. Will Herring, linebacker or safety? I guess more of a small outside linebacker.
You know, what's interesting is we're not talking about anybody on the 2010 National Championship team because the second, you know, other than Josh Bynes and Nick Fairley, that defense was kind of anonymous, really. I mean,
yeah, and you know, you could put Chris Davis, but
yeah, well, he found ways. He wasn't like the greatest, I guess interception guy, right. But he certainly found a few times to put his name on the wall. Well, in terms of interceptions all time, number one is Buddy McClintock with 18 interceptions from 67 to 69. So yeah, you had to go way back. And then number two is Dave Beck from 70 to 72. That was only amazing. You know, he had 14. So from 67 to 72, we had a couple of defensive backs that had 32 interceptions over the space of like 5 years. That's amazing. And then Brian Robinson is number three. And then you go back to the 60s again. Then there's David King that I mentioned, 81 to 84, had 12. He was a really good, solid defensive back for us. I think David King is the one. It might have been David King was the one that I remember when I was there. No, I think he'd already been gone. There was a defensive back right after him when you and I were there that like made up T-shirts for all the defensive backs because they said that it was just like what I was just saying. They felt like the line and the linebackers got all the attention, and so they had these T-shirts that said the Auburn DBs on it. They said, yeah, we wanted to make a little attention to ourselves. We have David Langner, who's best remembered for the punt Bama punt game, running back the two kicks, and then Larry Kasher. Larry Kasher from 97 to 2000 had 11 interceptions. And then Chris Schelling, we mentioned. Chris Schelling is the one that I think that recovered the fumble in the first quarter of the interception game with LSU. And then the other guys all ran back interception.
And the other guy we forgot there was Calvin Jackson.
Oh, yeah.
Like he had the big run. He had a 96-yard one against Florida in 93.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, he was like a student in a class I was a teaching assistant for that year, I remember. Yeah, he's the one that stepped in front of the ball in the end zone and went back the other way, and that was just that was the moment that it was about to be 17-0 Florida, and instead it was 10-7. That was as big of a momentum changing play as there's ever been. Yeah, then you go back to the 70s, the 60s. You got Clifford Tony, Jim McKinney, Larry Willingham, Bobby Freeman back in the 50s is still on there with 11 interceptions. So, you know, it's just this is a position where there's always been interception. And so people have 11, 12 interceptions like it's nothing back then. It's different now. I think the passing game is more maybe precise and more calculated now, you know, and so you don't get as many interceptions and just like you used to, maybe. I don't know.
I think it's fair. The completion percentage is much higher now.
Yeah.
So
when I look at like total tackles on defense, I don't really see they're all linebackers and linemen. I don't see a lot of defensive backs there. I don't see any, honestly. Yeah. So let me look at solo tackles. Yeah, it's Greg Carr and Takiyo Spikes, Anthony Harris, Quentin Riggins, Tracy Rocker. Yeah, just not a lot of defensive backs getting a lot of tackles like that. So, yeah, that's pretty much what I had. I think we've named – I'm sure there's a handful more that we didn't name, and we'll get tweets about it and whatever, and that's fine. But yeah, that's – it's just – I think it's a position that's a little harder to measure because, like you said, what are you looking for? Are you looking for big plays? Are you looking for just steady – I mean, you could have zero interceptions your entire career, but you could be a shutdown corner. They just don't throw it at you, you know.
That's true. I mean, and that happens. And then you have guys that have value other ways. Like Damon Washington was on the 2010 team.
Yeah.
Started at cornerback, made a bunch of plays, but it was really made his difference as a kick returner on that team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was a real difference maker there.
We had a guy, I want to say maybe under Pat Dye, we had a little scrawny defensive back that wasn't particularly athletic named Chip something. And I remember on the other side was our like all SEC defensive back, but yet the Chip guy had led the team in interceptions. And he said, yeah, they won't throw to the other guy, so they just always think they can beat me and I keep intercepting it. Yeah, he just got a lot more opportunities than the really good player. So, yeah.
Last guy I want to throw out is one of my personal favorites, Junior Rose Green.
Oh, yeah.
From the 2004 team. Just really solid all-around safety, really productive player.
So. Absolutely. I'm glad you thought of him for sure. All right, so I guess we can go ahead and thank our patrons real quickly. We always have to do that because you wouldn't get scintillating defensive back conversation like this on any other show. And the only way that you're going to get it here is if we can pay the bills. And so you guys enable us to be able to do that, from everything from our web hosting and podcast hosting to our URLs, the website, the multiple websites. And then, of course, you know, even things like our road game road trip coming up maybe later this year, if all the ducks are in a row and all the stars align and everything, we'll be relying on you for that. I'm already kind of thinking about how we're going to do it in terms of maybe getting a camera, and I've been talking to some people about how that would work. So we'll see. We're going to keep you updated when we know something. Right now, it's all kind of conjecture. But yeah, we don't do commercials, so we need you guys to keep giving us your support, and we try to give back to you a good quality show every single week. Now, you know, we used to take weeks off. We don't really take weeks off anymore, John. We're pretty much here plugging away on the factory floor every dang Monday night for you guys. Plus, we do things like we just did the basketball tournament, pick 'em, and we're doing the Fantasy Formula One right now, where I am still in first place after three races, but Mira's Del Taco Racing Team is right on my tail, just a few points behind. And then the usual suspects like Allen. I think Jared's team is up in the top five right now, and Allen and a couple others. So, and maybe Rob Morgan is always up there. So that's always cool. So anyway, if you want to join in the fun, just go to www.auwishbone.com, auwishbone.com. Click on the big orange button. Here's the folks that are currently keeping the lights on in the old White Rocket Studios. They include Chris and Clinton Stewart, plus, oh, I didn't click the right button here. I was like, why is that up there? There's so many buttons to push, as I say every day in class with a hybrid. Plus, Carl Von Drunker, Christopher Burleson, Samuel Salvatore, and then Bart Lindsay, Bradley Blackman, Chris Usher, Gary Grant, a.k.a. AU Fan at KSC, Phil Amthor, Richard Stevens, Steve Trawick, Susan Trawick, Trombone Tiger, Willie Carden, Ann Kangian, AU Falling Up, Ben Bloodworth, Clay Henson, Dan Thompson, Daniel Odom, David Evers, David Hegler, Emmanuel Seaman, George Gaston, Jacob and Robin Fleming, John Otsuki, Catherine England, Kevin Smith, Mickey B, Mississippi Tiger, things are happening on the screen, Phil Davis, Preston Settle, Reynolds Wolf. Reynolds was very kind to text me immediately this morning when somebody had like hacked my Facebook account, so I appreciate that, Reynolds. Rich Reimer, Steve Harlan, Timothy, WDE Richie, we got to get better at celebrating. Wes Atkinson, William Morgan, Wilson Beard, Winston Boddy, Alex Wynn, Blake Heron, Boris the Tiger, Chris the Hilton. Oh, we lost a the. Must have got rearranged. Colby Butler, Danny Flack, Darius Benton. I don't see a notice. David Simpson, Diabama, anytime now. Earl Ricks, Eric Mahan, Hugh Anderson, Josh Teal, Kevin Kanoy, Kevin Mahan, Christian Thorvaldson, Lane Middleton, Melissa Blackstone, Mike Fidley, Algorithm, Papa Todd, Patrick Williams, Randall Walker, Rob Morgan, Ross, Russell Milling, Sarah Hines, Sasquatch, Shane Bailey, Shannon Butson, and Snowdog, Stephen Houston, Tim Pittman, Tony Perry, 76 Tiger Still Lives, Auburn Elvis, Ben Amos, Ben Riggis, Brandon Smith, Chris Como, Darren Pyle, David Smiley, Donnie Reynolds, James Taylor, Jason, the Weasel Skull Albrecht, John Stubbs, John Zavachin, Joey Miller, Joseph Iliff, Justin Bean, Kathy Bright, Kenneth Brent Rains, Mark Squire, Matthew Flowers, Mick Vigicana, Paul Bankson, Public Landowner, Robert Drain, Russell Souther, Ruth and Darren Sutherland, Spanky, Stephen Thompson, Trevor Johnson, Brant Rumble, Chris, and our one-time and anonymous donors. We thank you all. Go to www.auwishbone.com and don't forget don't forget whatever it was I was going
to
say.
Don't forget to forget.
That's it. All right. And now we have Jared's latest installment of Guess the Game. I'm a little concerned, John, because he basically said this was an unusual one. And when something is unusual for Jared, that has me concerned. But we'll see.
I think it's Auburn against Arkansas in cricket in 2011.
I wouldn't put anything past him as long as we win. He has said we win. So Let's go to the audio tape and find out what exactly he has in mind this week. Here we go. Who can it be
now? Hello, Van, John, and the rest of the AU Wishbone family. This is Jared Albrecht, the yard sale artist, here with Guess the Game, episode 11. We're going to mix things up a little bit on this episode, gentlemen. In round one, I am going to play you the audio of a play as usual, but this time, no bleeps. It might sound rather banal the first time you listen to this play, but use your hints and see what you can come up with. And then in the hint file, I am going to play you another play from the same game. And then when you combine those two, I have all the faith in the world in you, but let's get to your first play. Here is Guess the Game, episode 11.
West Byram going to attempt this field goal from 35 yards out. He's 4 for 5 on the season. Picked a couple of game winners last year, and this one is good.
There you have it. Fairly routine, fairly mundane. Why would I pick it? Who knows? But discuss amongst yourselves what game you think it's from. Who were we playing? What year was it?
All right. What year did West Byram kick a couple of game winners? Because it's the year after that.
Well, I'm going to say his freshman year was 7, and he beat Florida in the Swamp. Because his senior year was 10, and he closed out his career beating Oregon. So 7, 8, 9, 10.
So you think it's 8.
Did we win any games that year? I'm serious. All right. I mean, 8 was like... That was the year we ran Tubbs off because we went, 5-6? I mean, you know,
it has to be the year after. It's an ESPN game.
And it's early in the season. It's fairly early in the season because he's like kicked 5 field goals or something, right?
Right. So it's early in the season. And again, I think it's 8 because it's the year after he kicked a couple of game winners. So I think you're right. I think 7, he kicked some game winners. So I think it's 8.
I don't think he kicked many game winners in 08.
No, and it wasn't a game winner. That was just a regular field goal he made.
Right. I'm saying it's less likely that it's 9 because the previous year would have been 8, and I don't think he kicked any game. Well, now, in 8, he did kick the 3 in the 3-2 game. There's a good trivia question by itself. You know, in the infamous 3-2 Auburn Mississippi State game, who kicked the 3? It was West Byram.
No, wait, was that an 8?
That was an 8.
Oh, I think this is the game. I think this is the game. I think that's the play.
Ah.
I think that's it.
You think that Jared's being all slick and giving us the 3-2 game?
Yeah.
I like it. All right, let's go. We'll do our infamous all in. I'm with you. I think that's what's working in his mind. All right, let's hear the second one, but I'm all in on that being the infamous 3-2 Mississippi State game. All right, here we go.
Okay, it's hint file time. Let's listen to the second play. I know I did a little different this time. Another unbleeped play from the same game.
3rd and 9 coming up. Todd passing out of his end zone. Flag down.
We're going to get complete. I just said the shutout. We're going to get holding in the end zone by Auburn,
which means
it's going to be a safety.
Woo. All right. There's just no way you haven't gotten it by now. So let's hear them answers.
Yeah, I think that's it. We have found you out, Jared. It was excellent, excellent. But I think that had to have been it.
It's 2008 Auburn at Mississippi State.
Oh, yeah.
The infamous 3-2 game, which everyone, you know, should definitely not watch again.
With Sylvester Croom, yeah. All right, here we go.
All right, Van and John, I'm quite certain that you pegged this down as Auburn versus Mississippi State 2008 in the very famous, infamous, 3-2 game. Once again, I've been Jared Albrecht. I am at Yard Sale Artist, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. If any listeners out there want to hit me up with a suggested play for Guess the Game. Back to you, Van and John, and War Eagle.
Yeah, I hope people will, because those are good, and he does a great job with them, and I want people to give him some good suggestions so they'll keep on being really good. Yeah, I think that that was really slick of him. That was a very clever idea. But we totally figured it out, man. I love it. We zeroed in on the year. We knew the player. We got in on the year. And then the circumstances all just kind of, all the dominoes fell into place. It was nice. Very satisfying.
Yep, nice work. Nice job.
Good job. Good job. I think that was a good team effort. I mean, we pulled pieces together between us and we figured it out. That's good. All right. Very good. Let's see where the show is now. I guess it's time. Uh-oh. Wow. Yeah, you want to play a Kingdom of Heaven clip, you got them right there in front of you, but you need like the thing we've done every week for nine years. Say,
you got to dig deep into the soundboard to find the clip that we use every week.
Oh, my God.
Thank you. Order questions to the Prime Minister.
It's time for listener questions. Dun, dun, dun. On the AU Wishbone podcast.
Sometimes I can't find it, John.
It occurs.
Curse. All right, so what have we got in the old mailbag this week, if anything?
All right, we got to challenge the listeners a little bit here, okay?
Yeah.
Like this, we're not getting the volume of questions we need.
Well, there's just not a lot going on right now. I don't blame them.
But, you're allowed to ask. It's the off season.
Yeah.
You're allowed to ask a little more out there questions, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So just whatever.
Yep.
Throw it in the mailbag. We'll answer it. Okay.
The challenge to the listeners that after this episode, John is saying,
"You have failed me for the last time."
And now he is ready. He's ready for some good questions.
That's okay. But we have one really good question this week.
Okay.
That I think is going to spark some good discussion.
All right.
And it is from Trey Bamberg, who says, "John and Van, I think it would be really interesting to hear y'all discuss the scenario if the SEC went to a pods scheduling system in football. Thank you for continuing to put out content even during the slow sports periods. War Eagle, Trey Bamberg."
That's what we do. We're always right, here on the factory floor hammering away.
We are here. We are making the content. So I'm going to walk everybody through this since we have a little time. And for people who are not familiar with the concept of pods, here's the deal. You blow up the traditional college football schedule, and instead of having the way the SEC has done it, you have each team would have like three permanent opponents,
mm-hmm.
and then they would have five rotating opponents, okay? And so that counting the team itself with the three rotating opponents, that's four, and then five rotating opponents means that in a two-year period, you could play every team in the league. Mm-hmm. And in a four-year period, you could play every team in the league home and away.
Home and away. Okay? Unbelievable, yeah.
So this, as an example, a couple of years ago, Banner Society published an SEC pods thing. And so their proposal for Auburn was that our permanent opponents would be Bama, Georgia, and Mississippi State.
It's a heck of a pod, but yeah, that's how it would work to get everything match up right. Sure.
That's right. So then they broke it down and they made some adjustments. But so then in the even years, our rotating teams would be Kentucky, LSU, Ole Miss, Tennessee, Vanderbilt.
Mm-hmm.
And then our odd years would be Arkansas, Florida, Missouri, South Carolina, A&M.
That's fairly evenly divided, I think, between
the
two.
It is, and neither one of those is like, oh my gosh, that's brutal, right?
No, right.
They both seem better than our current schedule.
Yeah, honestly. Okay,
go ahead.
It absolutely is a better system than what we have now in terms of getting to play everybody and all that, for sure. The problem I see with it is, it's the eternal problem that Alabama wants to be in a thing with Tennessee, and they're not going to want to be in a thing with Georgia. That pod benefits us because it hits all of our kind of, it gets us Alabama, Georgia, and then like we always play Mississippi State, that's fine, and they're not LSU or Florida, so that's fine. But it keeps Alabama from playing Tennessee every year. They'd only get to play Tennessee every other year.
Their permanent opponents are Auburn, LSU, and Tennessee.
Oh, I mean,
each team has three permanent opponents.
Okay, so the pod is not the same for everybody in the pod.
No. Exactly. It's not a mini division. It's literally like you have three permanent opponents. Everybody has three permanent opponents. They're not a group.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, it's even more brilliant than I remembered.
Yeah,
okay.
So Georgia's permanent opponents are Auburn, Florida, South Carolina.
Right. So they're not stuck in the Alabama, Mississippi State, Auburn pod that we're having. They have their own pod. Everybody has their own pod.
Yeah.
It's kind of like podcasting nowadays. Everybody has their own pod.
Yeah. So like Tennessee's pod is Alabama, Florida, Vanderbilt.
Oh, that's...
Yeah, that makes perfect sense.
How are we not doing this? It's perfect.
And again,
it's
much more even from a balance standpoint.
Absolutely.
And everybody gets to play everybody. So it's better for the players. It's better for the fans. We get to see the teams that we want to see. You know, different teams come through Jordan-Hare more often, and we get to go to the visiting stadiums. We want the different ones more often, like Missouri for you. And,
yeah.
You know, that's the biggest thing is we've talked a lot and fussed a lot about how we played Clemson more than we played Florida or Missouri, you know, or Tennessee.
Yes, absolutely. So, why are they even in the same conference? They never play each other. Missouri entered the SEC in 12, and Auburn has been up here once, and it's 2021. And if we hadn't played them in the SEC championship game, we'd have only played them one time. One time. How are we even in a conference with a team we would have played one time in 11 years or whatever?
It's true.
It makes perfect sense. I mean, and think about what it also does. It means we play Alabama, Georgia, Mississippi State every year, just like we normally do. We don't lose anything there. But we don't have to play Ole Miss every year anymore, which I've never liked. Not because I'm scared of them or anything. It's just Ole Miss was never a regular opponent for us. They were an occasional opponent. Honest to God, John, we used to play Southern Miss more than we played Ole Miss.
Yes, we did.
And
we played Tennessee way more than we played Ole Miss.
Oh, yeah. And that would let us play Tennessee twice in 4 years, which is a lot better than now. It lets us play Florida twice every 4 years, which is a lot better than now. And it means we only play LSU twice every 4 years, which is a lot better than now. Because, again, I still don't understand why we play LSU every year other than because they're in the West. But, you know, so, yeah, it eases us up on playing some teams, quote unquote, too much. Arkansas. Why do we play Arkansas every year? I know. Again, the answer to all these questions is because of the SEC West. So the answer to the answer is blow up the SEC West, go to pods, and then you don't have to play Arkansas every year. You don't have to play Ole Miss every year. You play Tennessee and Florida as often as you do them, and you get to play you don't have to play LSU every freaking year, which would be great for our schedule, I think. Yeah, I mean, I there's not a downside to it at all that I can see.
Well, here's the downside. Are you ready? How do you determine who goes to the championship game? You're going to have to go back to the top two teams by record, and then what if they played each other? Are there tiebreakers and that kind of thing?
Well, you know, the only reason we have divisions right now, the only reason there's an East and a West is so they could have the championship game and make the money. Yes.
Money.
Let's walk backwards. They want the money. How do you get the money? You have a championship game. How do you have a championship game? You exploit a loophole in the rule and have divisions. How do you have divisions? You add Arkansas and South Carolina. Right? You can just reverse engineer the thing step by step by step. So if you can... Now that you can have the championship game without having the divisions, and I think that that's true now. I think they changed it. If that being the case, you don't need the divisions anymore. They're an anachronism. They are an anachronism, and you don't need them anymore, and they were stupid to begin with. And so now you'd have a much more balanced setup, much more balanced, and certainly much more balanced year after year, because we're not playing, you know, LSU on top of Georgia and Alabama every year. And then maybe Florida too, we're rotating them around. You're not going to get like five of them in 1 year, half of them on the road or whatever. So, yeah, you would just have to figure out, well, I mean, how did we decide the SEC champion through the 70s and 80s, you know? You just have to figure out by the records and tiebreakers and whatnot, yeah.
No, it's an infinitely better system.
Yeah.
And the SEC has indicated that they are looking at new scheduling models in the future, not tomorrow, or not the year after, but they're talking about new scheduling models. And I think I to me, it's one of those things of like, what do they want to do? They want to keep the sport popular and they want to make more money. This would do that.
Yes.
Now, it's harder for fans to look at the standings and go, who's going to make the championship game? But it's more teams playing other teams they don't normally play and more fun. And what do they, more talk about the SEC football. If they went to this, there'd be a lot of talk about the change and what it means and all that kind of stuff. I think players would be excited to play other schools. So I think it's a
you know what win, you could win. Do? Yes, win-win-win. You know what you could do is that the SEC could just have a little committee like the playoff committee, and every week they release a 1 through 14, and the top two are going to go to Atlanta. Right? I mean, they rank them, and they have a – you don't even really need a committee. You just need somebody with a computer and a calculator and a pencil and stuff. And just every week you have a set number of
tiebreakers.
Tiebreakers and whatnot. And then you just rank them 1 through 14 every week, and the top two at the end of the season.
You publish the ranking every week. More content.
Absolutely. People be arguing and debating over that 14 ranking and who's in 14th.
Here's the standings this week.
Who's in 14th? And if it's not Vanderbilt, when is the coach getting fired, right?
That would be so great. They'll never do that because that would freak people out.
You know, I thought probably, it's funny. Like, think about Vanderbilt saying, we've had 12 teams in SEC for a long time now. We need to change this. We're tired of being 12th every year. So now you're 14th every year. You're not 12th anymore. Congratulations, Vanderbilt. You're not 12th anymore. We created a basement below the basement, and you're in that now. Although, honestly, the last few years, they haven't always been 14th, to be fair.
They haven't.
Yeah.
So I'd like to thank Trey Bramberg for that question.
Yeah.
And lay the challenge out to the rest of you. Send us your good questions. Do you have questions about the pod system we just went through or scheduling in general or anything else? So send it to us at auwishbone@gmail.com.
That would be
on Twitter.
On Twitter, that would be such a civilized set of rules, but of course, right now.
But here, there are no civilized rules. I have business in the East.
The SEC East. He had business in the SEC East, John. What can he say? All right. Well, that was good. I thought that I don't know if we even remotely answered the question, but we certainly talked about the topic and reminded me of why I thought it was such a good idea. I remember when somebody first brought it up several years ago, said pods. I'm like, oh, no, that's got no chance. Just the name of it alone, no, that's never going to happen. And then I kind of like went through all of it, just like you just did with me. And I'm like, man, this is great. And then I kind of I remembered the one side of it that's good, which is that the five and the five rotate. But then there's the other side to it, which is that even within the four, you're not playing within each. It's not like a little World Cup group of death.
That's right.
It's perfect. It's brilliant. It
individually customized permanent opponents.
Yeah, I mean, how can they not do that?
I think it's way too smart to not do it eventually.
It is. It really is. It really is great.
The only thing stopping us is tradition.
Well, they've gotten around that with like the playoffs and the BCS mm-hmm. and everything else. So. Yeah, money talks and tradition walks sometimes when it comes right down to it. So
there you go.
I did see somebody the other day suggest that if you had like a permanent playoff deal, make the Rose Bowl the permanent national championship game and have it like Omaha for the College World Series or something. What do you think about that?
It's fine. I mean, I think we're nearing a time when the playoff is going to expand, right?
Yes.
It's going to go to six. In my view, is it goes to eight, and it's the five permanent. It's the five conference winners, two wild cards, and the best non-power five team. You can play the first round on home stadiums.
Yeah, you have to.
And then the second round would be in the big bowl games. And the championship game being in a big bowl game, or would be the playoff.
Well, the argument was made that the Rose Bowl actually has long football tradition. And these other games kind of come and go from one place to another. Like, just playing in Arthur Blank's big stadium in Atlanta, is that really a national or playing in the thing in Texas, Jerry World or whatever? Maybe Pasadena would be the – you can put the other bowls in there, but you want your final game to be in in Pasadena. I'm fine with me. You know,
we're nearing a point where we're just like blew all the bowls up. The upper level bowls, just blow them all up and forget it.
Yeah, that's true.
Go to 16-team playoff. Just do away with all of them.
Some guys are going to get banged up. But, yeah, that's always the thing, is that football is just a sport that makes it very hard to do that. You know, at some point you're playing an NFL schedule and you're still not getting paid. So now you got to start playing.
If we go to 18 playoff, you got to reduce the season to 11 games.
So. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that was kind of our around the SEC as well. So I'm willing to call it a night if you are. You good?
I'm done.
I think that means our time is up. We thank you for yours. War Eagle, John.
War Eagle, man.
Thanks for listening to the AU Wishbone. Find links to everything we do at www.auwishbone.com. For more Auburn fun, join us on Twitter at @AUWishbone and at facebook.com/AUWishbone. War Eagle.
The AU Wishbone is produced by Van Allen Plexico and John Ringer. Copyright 2020.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.
Thank you for listening to the AU Wishbone Podcast.